Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 758.
Wow. That's right? A lot.
It really
I'll
is
just say that every time we say a number, because it's always going to be a lot. It's going to be more than the last time.
Every time. Each one's
every time
more,
I'm in
as we slowly creep towards 1,000. What do you got on the nerd? Well, first of all,
yeah.
Do you want to promote anything? You guys are changing your Tampa date for
Talk Salad
and Scrambled Eggs.
Tampa date is being rescheduled. We haven't got that on the books yet, but I'll promote the closest show first. If you're in Los Angeles or Pasadena, we're going to Pasadena. We're going to be at the Ice House on December 5th. 2015. Kevin Smith and I will be talking some salad and some scrambled eggs. It's a podcast about Frasier where we do an audio commentary for a Frasier episode that nobody asked for and we insisted on recording anyway. But the first half of the show really is just loose. It's just Kevin and I shooting the shit. It's a lot of fun. You don't have to like Frasier to come, but you do have to like us.
That's very helpful. Also, I want to say that speaking of eggs, that...
Are you going to start talking about Twitter beef you have with someone with an egg profile?
No! Oh, God. That could take up months. I could just do that for months. No. So Puny, which is the animation company that I bought half of with my friend Shadi Potosky, did a pilot for Amazon Prime called Danger and Eggs. And it's a kid's show. But
great
I feel
segue.
Like, I feel like it's also for animation nerds and stoners. But the show's really fun. Adi Bryant is in it, she's in SNL, and it's an Amazon Prime pilot program, so if you watch it and comment and rate, then the more it gets, the more chance it has of getting
going to series. Yeah.
Going to series. So
Amazon lives in this weird meritocracy where you can just like
how
stuff
dare you make
and
sense.
They make more.
Yeah. So it's called Danger and Eggs. It's on Amazon Prime. Please watch it and rate it and comment on
it. Don't know what to do with the salad and danger.
They're calling again. They're rating again. What do you got on the Nerds Community Corkboard, Katie Levine?
Ron Funches, who we all love, has an album coming out this Friday. It's called The Funches of Us, and the artwork is awesome. Look at that artwork.
Saw that. It's beautiful.
Isn't it
the
so
world
cool?
has ended. It's
yeah.
Funches.
God, it's him
fantastic.
And his son. It comes out, again, this Friday, November 13th, and you can pre-order it now on iTunes or Amazon or anywhere. And also, check out the, it was last week's episode of Chewing It with Kevin and Steve. They filmed the first week of Super Troopers 2, and they talk all about it, and it's really cool.
Also, if you haven't downloaded the Make Tech Human podcast yet, I'd appreciate it if you would. A lot of you have responded. It was hard to find on iTunes because I've just discovered that the way that Wired made me name this podcast is # Make Tech Human, all one word.
Yep, I saw that on Twitter.
Oh, no. So there's no way to...
Well, I've gone in and just tried to fix some tags. It's going to be a little more searchable right now. But if you search one word, Make Tech Human... Download it. There's a new episode coming out.
We dare you to find it.
There's a new episode coming out this Wednesday. So if you're busy listening to this podcast and you want your computer to be doing something in the meantime, maybe you download the Make Tech Human podcast. I'd appreciate it. And you know what? So would the Lord Jesus Christ.
Well,
I don't know if he would. Really? Did it check out?
I don't know.
So would Yahweh.
All right. Perfect. This episode is our dear, wonderful friend, Emily Gordon, who is one of the most awesome, smartest, coolest people in the universe. She is promoting her book, Super You, Release Your Inner Superhero, available wherever books are sold now.
It's Emily, available literally right now.
It's
yeah,
so
it's available
good.
Right now.
It's
and
amazing.
Emily is so rad, and she's part of the team that does The Meltdown with Joan.
Emily
McNeil.
Is writing this season on The Carmichael Show.
Yeah, oh, my God.
She's a staff writer on that.
It's fucking awesome.
Emily is a jack of all trades.
There's nothing she can't do. And also, she's in the Indoor Kids podcast with Kumail.
Jack of literally all trades. The last trade was podcasting.
All right, do it. This is Nerds Podcast number 758 with Emily Gordon. Katie!
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Lately, I've been holding mics at things, but I'm going to try them.
That's just, you know, the evolution of you.
How do you do Indoor Kids?
Like this.
That's weird. I feel like your arm would get tired holding your
does.
Mic stand up.
But my biceps have been great these days.
So you got it. But just like one crazy ripped arm.
from doing those curls.
I'm like those creepy truckers that like one half their faces is sun damaged, but the other one isn't. Have you seen that?
Just say truckers.
Yeah. I think, what? No, a lot of truckers listen to the podcast. They're good dudes.
On this podcast, we're anti-trucker.
The only, no, that's at Matt Myra is the Twitter account.
The person who said that information?
Yeah, that was the only good part of Lady in the Water was the one dude who just worked out one arm. They could have just cut everything else out of that movie and just had been that one
movie.
Character.
We were doing a thing back and forth of movies that take place in apartment buildings, mm-hmm. like going trying to name all the ones we could think of, and that was one I had forgotten about that someone reminded me, and I was like, oh, there's a reason I forgot
Does
about
Karate
that
Kid
one.
Count?
It really bummed me out.
No.
It doesn't. So much of it takes place in the school. So much, to me, I'm thinking...
At the All-Valley Karate Tournament.
The Raid. Yeah. I'm thinking...
Because it takes place more at Miyagi's place in the apartment. They just meet
Absolutely.
At the apartment and he gets his
know.
Ass kicked.
I just really feel like the apartment played a huge role in that movie.
I will say that when we moved to L.A., we were looking for apartments. Every apartment complex we saw, to me, reminded me of that like parched, sun-dried
Well, the real
complex.
Star of that movie was Reseda.
Obviously.
Oh, yeah.
I think was the real star of that movie.
Reseda
Yeah, there's
hairline.
A lot of those buildings around.
I mean, I don't know if you know this, but Tom Petty wrote Free Fallin' about Karate Kid.
Oh, that would be amazing. That would be amazing if that was true.
Ventura Boulevard.
Living in Reseda.
Living in yeah.
That's right. That song and then Sheryl Crow. Those are my only. And then there's a Mountain Goat song that talks about Los Angeles.
You almost
bunch.
Wonder if these people write songs on the way to the studio.
There's a Yoshinoya Beefle coming up on the lamp.
There's a lot of traffic. I'll be there in a minute.
We don't have Waze yet, but I bet it'll
What
be
is
a
that? I think I just had a vision. lots of porn and hot dogs. We I'm should. So happy that you're finally on our podcast.
I am too.
Emily Gordon, of course, co-host of the Indoor Kids.
Of course.
The coast to coast.
Coast
and,
to coast.
And also your spouse, Kumail Nanjiani, has been on before. And
Gross.
He's in some stuff.
Yeah.
And I've always adored you. You were the first director of the Nerdist Theater.
I was.
Emily Gordon was the first director of the Nerdist
That's
showroom
right.
at Meltdown.
I don't think either of us realized how big of a job that was going to be.
And yet you held on to it for like a year or two.
I did. I did it for about 2 years. And I you were like, I remember you were like, I think it's going to be like a couple shows a week or something. I don't know. We'll just have fun with it. And I was like, okay. And then...
Yeah, and then 7 nights a week
yeah.
of programming.
Again,
in addition to
problems.
You still producing the Meltdown
Absolutely.
Show on
yeah.
Wednesday nights.
Yeah, it was a fun, and I got to come up with, and unfortunately the very nerdy organized part of me, I got to come up with like how the emails go out to like producers and what we need to like account for, like how many microphones need to be on stage, what the, like I got to come up with all that stuff.
You know, the curse of being a well-organized, well-adjusted, smart person is that everyone will lean on you to do shit.
I know,
so
well,
it's kind
true.
Of a...
Yeah,
you,
Dory,
you have,
deal with it.
You have to... You have to get good. You have to. Matt's having his own podcast.
Yeah, right. Hey, buddy.
He's just saying stuff to his fiance. But you know, I think I would imagine. And tell me if I'm right about this. Do you feel like you have to be good at saying no to things because you're so capable that you have to learn how to pick and choose?
That's a very flattering thing to say. I'm so good at stuff that like I have to get so good at saying no. But it is true. I used to be so grateful for any opportunity that anybody would slide my way that I'd be like, yes, yes, always yes, always yes. I'll figure out how to make it work. Yes. And then after a while, I was like, oh, I'm hurting myself. And also all this stuff I'm doing is starting to suffer. So I have
to. Isn't it strange that sometimes it's kinder to say no to things?
That's what, and I always try to say, I'm like, I'm going to be very transparent with you because if I do this, I'll do a poor job. You won't be happy. I won't be happy. I can't handle doing a poor job. So it's better for me to say no and help you find someone that can do this because I am. And I do enjoy being, for a long time, I resisted how organized I was. But I used to like organize my stuffed animals in my bed, like by how their relations
and
were
a lot of those pictures
other.
Are on Instagram. Your Instagram feed is fucking amazing. These adorable pictures because it's... Some people look totally different when they're kids, but I can so much see adult Emily's face in
yes.
Tiny Emily.
Tiny Emily, yes. Teenage Emily, I kind of disappeared in there for a little bit. But like little tiny me, you can see like this like, hey, I'm sorry, that penguin is in the wrong place. Give me a second. I'll be right back.
People should, you're just, is it Emily, is it just Emily Gordon on Instagram?
No,
or is
it's
it Emily?
The Gynamite.
Oh, the Gynamite, the Gynamite. Yeah. The Gynamite, which is also your
great
Twitter
branding.
Handle as well.
Real terrible.
Keep it across the board.
Should have thought that through. Sure.
No, it's great. Yes, you're one of 50 people that I follow on Instagram, and I'm always delighted by the old pictures.
Weird. Why do you keep it at 50?
It's just a nice round number.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing. Like, look. I follow like 700 people on Twitter, mm-hmm. and it's just too much to keep up on.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of people.
50 is a manageable number.
You don't necessarily
on
have
Instagram.
To keep up on it. You know what I mean?
I do.
I like Instagram because it's not only it's more engaging than just looking at 140 characters mm-hmm. of text.
Well, it's 1,000 words.
I love the images, and I also love the...
We all were like, we're going to ignore that.
I love the image. Matt's own podcast. But I also just enjoy... Like, it's honestly how I catch up with a lot of people mm-hmm. and my friends and see what they're up to and where they're going and what they're doing. And mm-hmm. so to me, my Instagram feed is much more personal than a Twitter feed, where it's like, oh, I kind of like that person. I'll just kind of see what jokes they tweet out. But Instagram feels much more like...
You get to see into their lives.
I want to see into their lives, and I want to hang out with them a little bit. So that's why I like it.
Yeah. And I also have a thing where I have to get to the last picture that I remember seeing. Like, I'll keep scrolling. Mm-hmm. I can't stop until I get to that last...
Same thing.
And I've had to pull over like while driving to be like, okay, I'm sorry. Hold on. Let me just, all right. And that's like a little thing goes off in my head. I'm like, all right, I can keep going now. I'm good. I've figured out my Instagram.
Yeah. You shouldn't Instagram and drive. I don't know if you...
Oh, that's probably true. Let's say I'm sitting at a stoplight and then I'll pull over.
Officer, I wasn't texting. I was Instagramming. It's different. You moron. Get with the times, shitbag.
Then I try to explain Snapchat and his head falls off. What am I supposed to do
Then you
with
Snapchat that.
Which I don't do. Do you do that?
I've been... trying to get my name on Snapchat for a while. Someone was squatting it and not using it, so I'm in the process of doing that. So it's been delayed.
Yeah.
Twitter owns them, right?
No, Twitter does not own Snapchat. They're independent.
That's right. You're right. I'm thinking of, what am I thinking? Vine. That's what I'm thinking.
Twitter owns Vine, and they own Periscope. Those are the two that Twitter have.
That's very.
They own more than that. I think Twitter also bought TweetDeck.
They own Kellogg cereals.
Half of New Jersey, right?
Yeah, Kellogg cereals, half of New Jersey. Yeah. Crest toothpaste. They were trying to get that other kind, but they only got Crest.
That so other kind.
They
I was
own,
trying to think of one other kind.
Colgate.
They own the generic bags of cereal at the bottom of the aisle.
Which
they
are
own
my
all
favorite.
Those.
No. Yeah, I like a cereal.
Toastios. Wait a minute. Sugar Flakes. Come on. Who are you tricking? Come on.
Me. That's who you're tricking.
I had sent Kumail a text. Kumail congratulated me on my engagement. And I sent him a very sincere text where I said, you know, honestly, you and Emily are very inspirational to me. Aww. Because you guys have been married for what? Like
8 years?
8 years.
Yeah.
And
it's a long time.
You know, obviously you never know what it's like when you're not around a couple, but you seem to have a very good relationship, and you seem to have a very strong relationship in light of the fact that, you know, both of your careers are taking off, and you still genuinely seem to care about each other. And it's very inspirational to see that, like, oh, relationships can work.
Oh, that's lovely. That makes me very happy. And also, I mean, that is congratulations to you. What a huge,
oh, thanks.
It's going to be a big, big thing.
It's going to be, well, this one's doing it in a couple weeks.
2 weeks.
I'll get the dry run out of the way, Chris.
Yeah.
And then,
well, what was Jonas then?
We can see what a unlimited budget would be like.
If yours is the dry run. What was Jonas?
Jonas was the outline.
Marriage, like any relationship, is it's always got challenges, but like we kind of made a very clear decision, like we've got to be on each other's team, we've got to be a unified front no matter what, and like we will remind ourselves that even as we're fighting, maybe as we were this past weekend in a hotel room because we didn't feel like recording a podcast with our 2 hours that we had to spare while we were in Austin. And setting up to record a podcast can really bring out the best and the worst in everybody.
Well, that's an interesting point that you bring up, because the one thing my therapist told me something a long time ago that resonated with me.
Which one's this? Is this Batman's mom?
This was not Batman's mom.
Okay.
She's dead. I didn't know if you guys knew this. The very basics of superheroes.
God, so well played. There's not even anything to add to that. I mean, that was just perfect. The part that you missed from
Martha.
Yesterday is that the kid who plays Batman on Gotham.
Okay.
Bruce Wayne, not Batman. The kid who plays Bruce Wayne on Gotham. His mom was my therapist years and years and years ago.
Amazing.
Many years ago.
Okay.
So that's what Matt was referencing, but you stuck the landing on that.
Yeah.
Beautiful. And I think we should end the podcast.
I mean, I don't know. I think we should just
thank
stop
guys
doing
so
all
much.
Of us should stop doing podcasts altogether. It's not going to get more perfect than that.
If that's not the fucking AV Club quote of the week, I don't know what is.
Come on, guys. Let's get that pod mass.
We're not cool enough for AV Club anymore. We're too mainstream.
And yeah. Honestly, you guys have moved to the point where, like, obviously you're listening to that. Here are some other ones. I feel like that's how it... Yeah. I feel like that's what pod mass
does. That's what
does.
It started. Yeah, that's what it started as.
But I think that... relationships that are successful stem from kindness, that when two people are committed to being kind to one another, that's what carries people through everything. Because
the bullshit,
you know, there are times in a relationship where it's like, you just feel bad about yourself, or you just feel bad in general, and you're just not always super on board to have a person in your face.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as, like you said, you are always committed to understanding one another, even when you don't agree, or being kind to one another, even when you don't agree, then that's the ultimate goal. Because sometimes you just, you know, when you get to the point where you're just fighting to fight, then there's nothing is being accomplished.
It's really sad. And there's so many couples that get to a point where, like, that little, like, kernel of resentment they feel towards one another, instead of, like, making the choice to, like, no, I chose you a long time ago and I'm still choosing you. They start, like, that little kernel of resentment builds up and they're like, oh, fucking, why, always with you. And then it builds and then it builds. And then at a certain point, you can't go back.
Well, that's the active word, is that
you just described a pregnancy.
You can't have a late term.
You cannot go back.
Marriage abortion, but
actually you can.
You can.
I've done it. It's great.
Can. But you, but it's that idea of, and it's not just relationships, but it's sobriety. It's anything else. But I think people forget that there is an element of choosing daily. You daily make the choice, as opposed to, fuck, I chose that person 5 years ago.
Look what I'm stuck with.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As opposed to making the daily choice to be with that person and be committed, and, you know, and I think our human brains tend to score on a pass or fail, like a 0 or 100%.
Yes.
But a lot of life is like 60 or 70, 80%. Like, very few things are perfect
or
a disaster.
I completely agree with you.
And so I think, you know, sometimes when there's trouble in a situation or relationship, people are like, oh, this isn't perfect. Fuck this. It's well, you know, this is kind of how life is. You have to, like, not everything's going to be perfect. You have to not obsess over that.
Yeah. And I do think, and we all have plenty of friends that have dated people, and then a week, it's like Seinfeldian. We're like, oh, her hands are too big. Or, like, she smells weird when she wakes up in the morning. Like, okay, well, that can be your reason for not. Like, that
can be
the
reason. Because of her big sweaty hands. That's why she smells weird in the morning.
Yeah, they build up little things in the crevices.
Yeah.
You can come up with literally any reason to, like, be like, well, this is, I got to get out of this because this person's not perfect, because nobody's going to ever be perfect. But you have to, like, it is like sobriety. It's one day at a time. Every single day you're like, oh, I want to hang out with you today. And you also need to be a person that someone would want to hang out with every day.
Well,
that's the different part.
Also, a lot of times being able to say, like, you know, what is this really about? What is this really about?
I'm all about the what is this really about.
Yeah, because if it is like the kernel of resentment that's basically turned into a supernova of hatred.
Yep.
After
9 months.
And then you have a beautiful baby. A beautiful divorce baby.
then is it really about, you know, oh, you left the keys over here.
Exactly.
Like, oh, damn keys. Like, rah, rah, rah.
Yes. I always tell people it's okay to be afraid of something, and it's okay to be afraid of success, to be afraid of committing yourself to someone. But what's not cool is to come up with all these other bullshit reasons that obscure it. Like, admit that it's a fear. Admit that it's a whatever. I'm not ready for whatever reason. And then address that instead of, like, well, another girl wasn't good for me.
Right.
Well, I don't know if that's exactly it. It could be. I meet so many guys that just don't want to be in a relationship, but they tell themselves that they do. So they keep dating these girls and then being like, well, it didn't work out. She's not perfect.
Right.
Like, oh, okay.
Yeah, well, you're not either, asshole. Guess what?
I guess poor her or whatever. But, like, if you don't want to be in a relationship, that's perfectly fine, but that's what you need to be addressing or just accepting about yourself.
Two people in a relationship need to have the same goals.
100%.
They need to have the same goals. Even if they don't have the same likes on they need to have the same ultimate goal.
Yes.
And if you don't have that, that's problematic in the long term. You can deal with that in the short term.
Yeah.
But it's problematic in the long term not to have the same goals. But you were you actually a working therapist?
Yeah. 6.5 years.
Wow.
Yeah. Couples and family therapist, licensed in several different states for 6.5 years. And I had a hard time working with couples because that level of acrimony was just like, it was intense, man.
How do you not take that home? How do you, when someone is gushing all of their bullshit onto you, and as a therapist, and it being someone who's been in therapy and gushed all my bullshit onto someone, I'm one of however many people you're seeing in a day, or that person you're seeing in a day. So how do you not personalize that? Like, what protective armor do you have to keep?
I think my program did a really good job of teaching us things that we can do to kind of wash off the day. Because it's and it's not insensitive to say you don't want a therapist that hangs on to your problems hardcore. Like, people are like, well, that means you don't care. Well, of course I care, but if I held on to all your stuff all the time, I'd be dead. So I had a very elaborate hand washing ritual. I know it sounds weird, but like, I had a thing I would do at the end of every session, and then a thing I would do at the end of every day of like, I've got to leave this here. I can't take this with me. But I imagine it's not unsimilar to what you go through after live shows, when people want to kind of come up to you and talk to you because you've affected their lives. How do you not keep that with you?
Well, because I that's different because okay. I'm seeing people at their best.
Good point. That's a very good point.
Like,
yeah.
People are coming up to me, and even if they have a sad story, it's like, you helped me get through this or whatever. They're expressing appreciation, and I, as someone who didn't feel like it was that long ago that no one was coming out to see me, I'm very appreciative of it. And now it's kind of, you know, now it's sort of gotten to the point where it's difficult for me to do post-show meet and greets because the theaters are bigger.
Yes.
And
everyone wants a little time.
And
yeah.
What ends up happening is that out of 1,500 people, if 400 people stay, it keeps the staff at the theater for like 3 hours.
Yeah.
And then the staff is forced to stay. Then it's like, who do I service? You know, like, who am I? And then also just for me on wear and tear, I have to get up at 5 o'clock the next morning to fly back home, and it's midnight. And, you know, so it just becomes a question of, you know.
Well, it turns a 2-hour show into a 5-hour
to a 5-hour show, yeah. which I would do if I had an unlimited amount of energy and the staff had an unlimited amount of energy and didn't have curfews, or they didn't have to pay everyone to stay extra, or, you know, it's like the staff has to get home to their families, you know, so it's sort of a...
It's tough.
It's tricky.
Tough.
So So in answer to your question, I just feel like, you know, people are... It's not like people are lavishing wonderful things onto you when they're sitting in your therapy room.
You're so good at this. You're such a great therapist.
God, I have to... Oh. I mean, I have to go home after this?
Can you sign my shirt? That's never happening. Yeah. I never signed a single shirt as a therapist. And honestly, it may be...
When someone's leaving, do I take a selfie? No!
Just a quick one. It maybe did make me a little... I'm so... When any of my friends go through anything terrible, my knee-jerk reaction is to be like... Well, that's rough, but okay, let's and I move. I don't even process it for myself. I process it for them, and I don't even like let it affect me. And so maybe it's kind of the armor is maybe still a little bit too there. Like if you know, a friend of mine's family member passed away, and I immediately was like, well, you gotta, grief is a process, and I started going into all this, and I was like, oh shit, I'm not even, this is my friend, this is their like family member, this is like I need to take a minute to have like let this, I'm not a therapist here, this is my friend. So I think it's maybe a little seemingly dispassionate perhaps when people have bad things happen to them, because I immediately go into like, what can we do, how can we do, and that's not always,
and then
the
when they
way.
Start telling you all about the thing, you're like, you know, we're gonna have to pick it up there next week. No, we're friends.
I'm gonna have to go, it's been 50 minutes. Yeah, so I think, and even so, I handle when emergencies happen, I handle them, I kind of immediately go into problem solving and don't let myself feel anything, sometimes until later, because that's not my role right now. And that's a tough thing to get out of, and maybe that's why I always kind of feel like a therapist, because to me it's an identity that I'm not ever going to...
Does it automatically make you better at your personal relationship, or is it harder in your personal relationship?
Ask my husband. He would say maybe. Definitely not. And I'm not like... I also don't like that idea that like all therapists are messes as well, and like just trying to fix other people so they don't have to. I think it's a combination. I'm not necessarily better at any of this stuff. I'm divorced. Kumail's my second husband, so people used to make fun of me for that, and I was like, do you want someone seeing you that is like in an unhappy, in a not great relationship? You don't really want that. You want someone who's been through life.
Well, also, I mean, my guess is that you probably married young the first time.
Very, yeah.
And that's not, that doesn't...
It's amazing deduction, Chris.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Watson. But also that, you know, you can't hold someone accountable who's 32 for a relationship choice that they made at 20.
Absolutely,
I mean, like, that's, you know, it's just, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
You have to... this is a process, and you got to learn stuff, and that's part of your process, and you figured it out, and you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's a silly thing.
So I think people who think that I'm going to be better at all this stuff, that's incorrect. But I do have some tools, but that doesn't mean that I necessarily know how to. I can tell myself, oh, in this situation, I should do this, this, and this, and then I don't do it because it's my life, and I get to do whatever the fuck I want, and I don't have to do the right thing all the time. So I think, it kind of evens out a little bit, I hope.
You guys have the nicest, many Sundays in the summer, you guys would have little pool parties. And they were small, but, you know, everyone there was just, they were, first of all, like comedy nerd dream parties of just like the Silicon Valley guys and Edgar Wright and, you know, Lance Bangs and, you know, like all these really great.
I had not thought about that, but yes.
Really great, talented.
Who want to swim. Honestly, we have a resource that they want. We have the thing that they want, which is water.
You should just test, like, hey, we're having a, sorry, the pool's not working.
No pool. Anybody coming? Yeah. I really love that. I like having people over just to, like, be. I think that's a cool, and I used to put way too much effort into like planning parties, and I was like, it's way better if I'm just like, come over, we'll see what happens. And so that's what we've been trying to do this summer.
Yeah, but everyone's just really nice, and it's just a good group. I think it's a good time in comedy for good people, for nice people.
It does seem to be. I feel like there is more of a focus these days on things being excited and showing passion more so than being like bored or upset or angry by everything. And that still does well too, but I like that there's like people who are genuinely like a puppy dog excited about things, and that's what they're basing their work on. I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, those interactions, because people come over and then it's like, oh, well, let's go to dinner or let's go to somewhere else. I don't know. I really sense the community behind it, and it feels nice to... It's not like I hang out with those people every night,
sure.
But it just feels it just feels nice to be in a good community of people that you respect, but also feel like, oh, I love your work, but I also like you as a person, and yeah. You know, we're all kind of in the same boat. You know,
yeah.
It's like the us and the Garfunkel and Oates is, and then Natasha
is in Emily and Camille's pool.
Yes,
yeah,
we're all in the same pool.
Same pool together. Although I've not been in your pool yet.
You actually haven't gotten in. No.
Sometimes I just don't feel like getting wet.
I get that.
Although
get
we just got a house that has a pool.
You did get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we just got a.
That's very exciting. I know that. So
we're gonna we'll trade off with you. We'll,
okay. Downsizing, huh?
Yep, that's right. We're downsizing.
Yep. I had never in my life had a pool, even a little bit. I went to a community pool growing up, and like the idea that I can, yeah, I know it was Band-Aids everywhere.
There was, oh no,
Band-Aids and weird guys making weird. The guy who was the lifeguard was also our substitute bus driver. His name was Stone. I swear to God, and we all were in love with him. / he was creepy to us, but / he was paying attention to us. It was a weird. It was a very weird time. That was the only pool experience I had growing up. Was like going to that, and then
Stone.
He had a mullet and one earring.
Sure, he did.
Nice. Yeah, he's North Carolina. What are you gonna do?
Oh man, so you grew up in North Carolina.
I did.
Which you've shed any trace of anything?
If I'm angry. It comes out, or if I'm really tired, I start talking lightly. It's a little.
Do you really?
I get my accent will come back a little tiny bit. Does yours ever?
No, I don't think so. I never really had one because
yeah.
I moved. I was born in Kentucky and then lived in Florida for a couple of years, and then when I was like 8, we moved to Arkansas for 6 months, and then Memphis. And I was already a formed little person by the time. I was actually living in the deep South.
So many parts of the South, though.
Yeah, I know. And that's why I always just say when people go, where are you from? I go, Memphis, because it's just easier than I was born in Kentucky. I lived in Southern Florida, Central Florida, Arkansas, Denver, Memphis. But, you know, Memphis was outside of Los Angeles. Memphis was the longest chunk of time.
Yeah.
So and also the most developmental.
And the most like noticeable, like that's a city people know. You know what I mean? Like, oh, Memphis. I get a sense of what that looks like.
Yeah. And my dad still lived there and now lives there forever.
Yeah.
Because he's not alive anymore.
Him and Elvis Aaron Presley.
Yeah. Him and Elvis Aaron Presley. They're right there. Right there.
I like that you use the middle name.
Yeah,
that doesn't happen that often.
King deserves it.
You think about it. His middle name is Aaron.
A-A-R-O-N.
What if his
Tombstone
name
is spelled wrong, guys.
If he was just Aaron,
he's not really in there.
He's not. Where is he?
He's in there.
He's in there,
but he's definitely in there.
The whole theory of Elvis being still
alive.
That
was the guy that we like picked. We were like, he's the one. For whatever reason, he's alive. We don't know why.
Watch the fucking 68 comeback special. I just watched it.
It's
a couple weeks ago. I'm like, it's like, oh, that, yeah.
Is that the black leather one or the white?
That's the black leather one. That's the fucking, he hadn't been around in a couple of years, and then he just shows up with his buddies and just fucking rocks it on NBC.
He really does. But if you think about it, the amount of stuff he did to his body to get ready for that is really bad for him. And I was like, maybe you should have just not done that, and we could have kept you around longer.
Yeah, but it was everything that happened between then and, you know, was it 74?
72.
70, 76. When did he die? 76. Maybe it was 76.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yes, you're right. Yeah. Because he had a... Martin D35 Bicentennial Edition, which was released in 1970.
Oh, who's Sherlock now?
Is that a
guitar lock?
Is that a bicycle or a?
It's a guitar.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
I only remember because I was old enough. Yeah, he had a bicycle on stage.
Ding 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 ding, just like auga.
Hey, you guys, I think we should start bringing these bicycles on stage now. People really like these bicycles.
And every woman's like, "I'll be the seat." It's
all right,
fine.
King. Yeah, whatever you want, E. But my dad didn't like flying, so we drove a lot of places around the country, you know, because my dad would do these bowling exhibitions and stuff, so we'd drive all over the country. He was on tour, and I remember being in the car when the announcement was happening, and my parents just being like, what the fuck? You know, I mean...
Mm. When the death announcement was happening?
Yes.
Oh, no. Wow.
Yes. Paul. And I said... my mom said that I said something like really creepily wise as a five-year-old, which was... something to the effect of,
I bet he got laid a lot.
There's going to be more pussy for everyone else. No. I said something about that it would have been difficult for the world to have handled an old Elvis.
Wow.
I know. That was crazy.
Very well done.
I think I was possessed.
By Elvis.
By Elvis. Hey, can you take it on my man?
Yeah, you know, I just take it out.
They have a Graceland traveling exhibit that's at the Westgate in Las Vegas right now, which was the old Hilton, which was where he did his show. And they let us, they took us back to the theater and they were like showing us the spot where he would pray before every show. Like the wood is still worn out. They didn't paint that part.
Do you think his religiosity was real?
Yes.
Okay.
Because you got to go through his whole early upbringing, and of course it was. Because he's deep South,
yeah.
Baptist.
You think Kanye's still religious, really?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Can't speak for Yeezy.
I just think it's interesting. All these guys that start out religious and then they get super famous and then they just go like apeshit and have this like baller lifestyle.
Elvis died in 77.
Are they still kneeling?
77.
Okay.
Still checks out with the Bicentennial Edition.
100%.
Absolutely does. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if they're still. I mean, you know, sometimes when I hear politicians talk about God, I kind of feel like, I don't believe that you think you're saying that because you know
you want the people to vote for you. Yeah.
The cool thing about he lived in the penthouse of the Hilton, and he had an elevator in his penthouse that would just go down and open up to the backstage area.
Ooh, that's cool.
And like there was a gunshot in the elevator because it was taking too long.
You so saw the gunshot? That's so cool.
Like, I fucking love Elvis. Like, you know, no one says shit to him. It was fucking Elvis.
This is how I feel.
Especially at that time.
Yeah.
When fame really meant something great, whereas like those people could get away with everything.
Literally everything. Would he have come on your podcast, do you think?
Oh, I wish.
I don't think so.
He did it. Like musicians, I feel like
Paul
it's a
McCartney.
Different...
We could have gotten Elvis.
That's true.
Paul McCartney seems pretty well adjusted though. Like Elvis would have had to have gone through a major emotional life transformation.
Oh, that's exactly when you would get him, right after that.
Maybe. Maybe. But I think, you know, when you kind of look at, I think when you start doing the social math of what he was embroiled in and the people that were controlling his life and the drugs that he was on and he clearly needed real therapy.
Yeah.
He clearly had a lot of mom issues and dead brother issues and fame issues and even being famous at that time and also going from, you know, I think it's more common now for people to talk about their feelings, but to go from, you know, like the hottest, sexiest, most perfect everything to this kind of like tubby guy who was trying to squeeze into these suits in a time when music was changing.
Yeah, and becoming more visual.
He just would have needed help to get out. It just, when you do all the social math, you're like, boy, it all checks out that he was going to kill himself sooner or later with some horrible thing.
He never got that big. Like, if you look at him, like, even they have his, like, they had all his, like, jumpsuits there in the cases.
Those things are always upsetting. I'm like, really? That small?
I'm like, yeah.
Everyone?
His waist, apparently, was always, like, 34 inches.
Well, it's not that he was a massive guy, but I just think dealing, like, just aging naturally.
It's hard.
And having been, you know, like this image of himself that everyone had, and obviously that wasn't going to last. And how do you?
I mean, who does that gracefully though? Besides like Paul Newman.
Almost no one.
Alec Baldwin, I think, did it pretty well.
He's done a pretty good job.
I don't even think he's aged out of being awesome yet.
No.
Like, he's not dealing with any of
that. We were talking about how Gary Oldman in my lifetime has gone from being sexy young guy to being, like, playing dads. Like, in Granddads, like, I've watched him become, like, start playing different roles. He's not, like, a hot guy anymore. He's, like, fucking commissioner. Like, he's
Johnny Depp.
Yeah,
he's fucking still nailing it. Tom Cruise is still nailing it.
Tom Cruise is so still nailing
it. He's ageless.
Yeah, he really is.
Bizarre. I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. But that would be a bummer too. I mean, stuff like Kurt Cobain, any of these guys, like to see them getting older is such a. We don't want that as a people. We just don't want it. Like, it's upsetting to us.
I do wonder what it would have been his 75th birthday. I do wonder what 75-year-old John Lennon would be like.
Yeah.
You know?
Probably Buddhist. I feel like they all would go Buddhist.
No, I honestly think, do you think John Lennon would have turned into like crazy old Ted Nugent guy?
No.
Really?
No, I don't think he would have gone right wing. No.
He had some hate in him though.
But some of the accounts make him sound like he might have been kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Kind of going through, and it seemed like he was going through identities that were appropriate for the time. You know, was he going to be the Imagine guy forever? I don't know if he would have been the guy forever.
But he had Yoko, though. I feel like Yoko would have tempered him in some direction at all points in time. That would have kept him from being Ted Nugent.
He would have dropped her in 84 and the Beatles reunited in 85. That's what would have happened. Central Park concert, 1985.
You've got this? You've retconned
all
this?
Well, you know what's funny is because they were having some money was tied up all over the place with the Beatles and they...
Michael Jackson had all the songs.
In 79, a team from the Beatles side of management got together and was seriously looking into a Central Park concert for the Beatles.
Wow. So would it have been like a Monkees reunion or would it have been like a...
What do you mean?
Well, the Monkees reunited in the 80s.
After they showed them on MTV.
On MTV, reunited in the 80s and had this really successful tour, but they were basically just playing old songs. Do you think the Beatles would have written new songs? They probably would have. Of course they would have written new songs together.
That's all they do.
Because Paul, that's all Paul. Yeah,
I mean, listen to fucking George Harrison's last album. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But I wonder if, like, in any relationship, and this goes back to the thing.
Segway.
Well, this goes back to the thing, because a band is now a four-way relationship in their
absolutely.
Case. And I think there's no way at that point they could have had common goals. And I think the only goal at that point when people drift so far apart, if you look at the Eagles is like, or the Police, it's like, well, money.
Yeah.
You know, like they have this common goal of money. They still can't bear to be on stage with one another.
Well, that's what happened to that's why the anthology happened, was they were like, we should probably do something now to make money.
To make money.
We don't
or it would have been possible that, you know, as they got older, they were like, yeah, fuck it. Let's just go back and do it again.
I would imagine time would heal some of those wounds of, like, just being in someone's face every single day.
You know, you would want to because Paul seemed, like, actually not knowing them really personally, but it seems like George seemed like a pretty cool guy. Paul seemed like a pretty cool guy. Ringo seems like a pretty cool guy. If John came around and ended up being a pretty cool
John's
guy.
John's fine. John and George and Ringo would play on John's records.
Now, are these the Beatles we're talking about?
Those,
okay.
those Georges and those Ringo, you know, would play on John's records. The only person they never really collaborated with afterwards was Paul.
Yeah, that's interesting. I know, and I'm more of a Monkees fan, and people want to kill me. More of a Monkees fan than a Beatles fan. I'm a huge Monkees fan, and
so you think Mike Nesmith is Paul of the Monkees?
He was the one that was like he got butthurt by a lot of stuff in that band, and he was like, I just don't want to deal with this anymore. I mean, yeah. I mean, have you guys seen Metallica, Some Kind of Monster?
Yeah, of course.
This is an amazing documentary of like a therapist that goes on tour with Metallica, and it was my dream job. When I thought, I was like, okay, that's what I want to do.
You could do that. Oh, fuck. I was just talking to these.
Well, didn't they say what they were paying him in the
Oh, I don't remember that. I actually don't remember that.
Paying him like $500,000.
Sure. Yeah. I would have done it for free. And not even for Metallica. I love that. Like,
No. Yeah. What you say is Metallica, I'll do it for $250.
I would have done it for Metallica. I still would. Give me a call. I just love that idea because it is just like a family or a relationship or anything else. It's people that, you know, have to work together. They're bonded by one specific thing, but that doesn't mean that they don't have a million. Everybody brings their own baggage. Everybody brings their own shit to every interaction they have.
Every interpersonal dynamic is affected by the shit that you bring to
100%.
It. 100%. Can you fit all the baggage in the store?
Can you hold all yours?
Bin? Can you hold all yours? And it really does come down to goals. And I think that's why it's important for people to periodically ask. People just don't ask questions. They don't ask good questions.
Yeah.
Even questions of yourself. You know, is this still what I want? If it's not, could it be what I want? What do I want? You know, like that people rarely stop to ask those questions, and they're such important questions.
This is, and I this is going
to
be one fuck of a segue, but the book that I wrote that is it's called Super You. Yes. My biggest thing that I got out of it was both writing it and in living and also in writing the book is this idea of intentionality of always stopping to question yourself, always stopping everything that you're doing, constantly asking yourself, is this actually what I want? Is this what someone else has told me that I want? Is this what society is telling me that I want? How do I figure out what I actually want? And then how do I get the thing? Because wanting something and then trying to get it are two different things. And people will tell me all day long about things they desperately want, but they're not ready to make efforts to actually get the thing they want quite yet. That's also fine. Just knowing where you are and knowing that even if you're making a good decision or like a very self-destructive decision, that you're driving the boat. This is your boat. And refusing to make decisions is also a decision.
Well, I think also sometimes your higher brain functions. I think sometimes you change and you don't realize that you've changed. Because, you know, look, there's so many things to do in a day to just live life now.
Yes.
And so you set a lot of things on autopilot.
Autopilot, that's exactly right.
And sometimes you really need to stop and go, oh, do I still feel this way about this thing?
Yeah.
Or is that just an old autopilot setting?
Yes.
Because it's so simple. You know, people are always looking for external things to change them or make them feel better when sometimes it's as simple as just asking yourself a good question and coming up with the answer and going, oh my God, to have that epiphany moment.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's not even epiphanies. It's like sometimes it's about just these little hints of knowledge that you're getting day to day and being like, well, maybe I'm going to try something different and see how it feels rather than waiting for inspiration to strike and changing. Sometimes you kind of have to start making the changes, see how it's affecting you, and then be like, it turns out this was probably a good idea.
Well, I think social media is, I think people use it in an ineffective way, which can be sometimes running around to everyone else and going, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? What's wrong with me?
Validation.
And not just stopping and being still for a second going, what's wrong with me? Like, what do I want? Like going inward just once. You know, sometimes people don't do that.
It's scary in there.
It is scary.
Yeah, it's real dark in there.
Well, because sometimes, you know, you might get answers back that you don't.
Absolutely.
You don't want to deal with.
You don't want to think about. You don't want to deal with. You're not ready for. And all that is okay, too. But address the problem as it is instead of being like, well, the issue is that no one's calling me back about the packet that I sent out on this TV show. No, part of the issue is that you're very scared to get this job. You're very scared what would mean if you got rejected. You actually got rejected for something you really want to do. Well, then deal with that fear. And don't, right. Like, that's a different, let's deal with the fears that are inside that we can do something about and not all the external things that are freaking us out constantly because we can't do anything about those.
How long did it take you to write the book?
About 5 months, a couple hours a day.
And so the point of the book really is, Super You is pretty, it's pretty much in the title, like how to be a better version of yourself.
Yeah, how to like figure out where you are, figure out where you'd like to be, and then how to kind of take concrete steps in that direction. Because I feel like for a long time, I just didn't know who I was even a little bit. And so I couldn't even figure out where I wanted to be because I just was so kind of lost within myself. So it's a little memoir-esque, but it really is kind of more of a self-help book than anything
else. God, it's so interesting that just the path that you've taken where you were a therapist and then all of a sudden you started getting people started learning who you are because of a podcast about video games and a Wednesday night comedy show that became a TV show.
Yeah.
And then you were able to use that to go, oh, here, this is this other thing that I'm into and I'm going to make a book about that. Because it would have been very easy for you to write a book about video games or a
which
book
is
about
what they were trying to get me to do. Yeah, how to be like a better nerd or whatever. And I was like, I can't, that's not, I like, first off, it's been done.
Yeah.
And other people have done it fantastically. And it's not, I don't, that's not how I see myself kind of doing, contributing to the world. That's not it. I will make a podcast about video games till the end of time. But that, like writing a jokey book about like, well, nerd culture's taken over. Like, that didn't appeal to me as much. But I kind of made a decision a couple of years ago once I moved to LA and I was feeling very kind of, I was kind of in an identity crisis. I hadn't started Meltdown yet. I hadn't started working, like running the theater yet. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. Had a conversation with a stranger at a bar. And she was like, it seems like you kind of want to be doing something in mental health. And I was like, fuck, that's right. Damn it. And even if that just started out with writing a blog, like having my own blog where I talk about mental health stuff, and then that tripping into writing stuff for other websites about mental health, and that tripping into, I was like, yeah, everything I do, I want it to have some sense of you're not alone, some sense of that tinged somewhere in there. And I've tried really, really hard to do that as much as I could.
What do you think is the biggest challenge that people with mental health issues face?
It depends on how I think that feeling like you're both special and you're not special in that. Yes, you're nobody else has lived life exactly as you have, but you're not the only person who struggled with feeling like a failure, feeling like a fraud, being terrified, being depressed, being anxious. A lot of people have experienced this. A lot of people have felt like everybody else is doing great and I'm doing terribly. Most of us have felt that way. And I think what mental illness and what emotional not health, whatever that term is, I should know that as a former therapist, but
emotional not health.
Emotional not health. What it wants is for you to feel alone. It wants to get you alone because that's how it can eat at you, and that's how it can kind of feed on you. And don't let it let you be alone. You're not alone. You're like, there's so many of us, and there are so many communities out there. Thank God to the internet. Thank God to all this stuff that you can find other people feeling as you are. Because you're not alone.
Yeah, who the fuck does Elvis Presley talk to?
Exactly.
That relates to him.
Yeah. Celebrities are different.
That's a funny thing. George Harrison said that in the Beatles anthology. He's like, I always felt bad for Elvis.
Yeah.
Because with Elvis,
he had no peers.
He didn't. With us, I could just talk to John or Ringo or Paul, but with Elvis, who do you turn to?
Yeah. Nobody.
Who do you turn to?
He doesn't, like, his family's
TCB gang?
No family. It's, you know, everyone's gone. Like, yeah, I mean, it's, and who else can understand that level of, you know, no one else can come in and go, I totally get it. No, yeah. you don't.
Yeah, and that's true. Elvis was alone.
But he is.
Elvis was alone.
But if you're not Elvis, you're probably not alone. Everyone who is not Elvis.
So lucky for all of us who are not Elvis. Yeah, you're not alone. What you're going through, wherever you are, is where you're supposed to be right now. It's okay. They're not doing anything wrong, but you can also feel better. You can feel better. You can live better. You don't have to, but you can if you want to.
It is. It's sometimes it's hard when you're in it, and I think that's sort of the. That's the Sarlacc pit of depression, mm-hmm. which is, and anxiety too. Anxiety, every time it's happened, every time I experience it, and I'm getting better about it now, but recognizing that it's just a thing and mm-hmm. not, because you're, with depression, you know, when you're in it, oh, well, this is it. I don't know how to get out of this. I don't know. With anxiety, it's, oh, I know the other times that was just a fake anxiety thing, but this time it's real and it's real. And it tricks you every single time. Yeah. And that's what – it's almost like the biggest struggle is the illusion that it's like
– Everything.
That it's everything. Yeah. And you can't – oh, I know I got out of it before, but this time that's not going to – this one's different. And a lot of the times it's not different. You know, it's like it's the same.
Yeah.
And being able to even recognize it as a pattern sometimes is enough to sort of help you just get enough of a boost.
A foothold. Just a tiny foothold to climb out of that pit. Because it isn't forever. It is just right now. But I have that thing too where whatever I'm feeling right at this moment, that's how I've felt forever. That's how I'll feel for the rest of my life. That's it. And you have to kind of back yourself away from that and get a little objective distance. I talk about that a lot of like you need to be able to kind of look at your life almost like a reality show sometimes. And some of us are too good at it. And that's a problem too. But like being able to step outside yourself and be like, okay, let's take a look at what's actually happening. If there was like a reality show filming my life, would it see that this is how I've been forever? Would it see that I'm having kind of a shitty day and that maybe I should just wait until the next day to try and like figure out what things are going and being able to back away just a little bit and kind of get some distance and kind of see your life as objectively as possible, which is very, very hard to do because we are so in it, has helped me tremendously. Because when I used to call it the wallow, I would like whatever I was feeling, I would wallow in it. I couldn't feel anything a little bit. I like everything was like, oh God. Like I just was like, I cry in English class, like just over a boy that I could not give a shit about. Like, why am I crying over this guy? I think I have a wealth of emotions and I've learned to kind of be okay with it now. But for a long time, I felt like I was drowning in them a lot. Yeah.
And how did you?
A very long. Well, for me, it took going the opposite direction, clamping down on them for years and not letting, and intellectualizing everything, not letting myself feel anything, dating circus performers so that I had no chance of them hurting me because they were, I didn't take them seriously. I wasn't taking myself seriously. Yeah. Cult members. I had some.
Oh my God.
I dated dudes for the story for like a while.
And are
I
think, you serious?
Oh, big time. And God bless those guys. You're all great if you're listening to this. But they knew what they were doing. They're cult. But like, one guy would like pretend to like, guess what I was thinking, like a number I was thinking, and I would be like, oh my God, you're right. Oh my God.
But he wasn't the number.
Of course not. He wasn't psychic. He was just like a bored guy. Well, it's fine. And I think, and then I just had this very icy kind of detached from my emotions completely. And then I kind of slowly kind of started letting them back in. But for me, I had to go through that. I had to like realize I could make my emotions my bitch and kind of put them in this little hole before I let them start advising me rather than driving. They should be in the passenger seat. I always put them in the driver's seat. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Even just those subtle thought shifts can help change the way.
Yeah.
You know, it might seem dumb to go, oh, I'm just going to visualize that this emotion is in the passenger seat of a car. But then you do it and you're like, oh,
yeah,
oh, that actually kind of helped. Like, you know,
yeah.
When I was getting over fear of flying.
You had a fear of flying?
Oh, sure. Yeah. For years. I got over it. I mean, like I had to work through it.
Poor career choice for you, buddy.
Well, but that's the thing that yeah. kind of made me go yeah. have to choose to not where I had to go like, well. I'm going to do stand-up on the road. I can either get over this or every time I travel it's going to be miserable and I don't have that much emotional energy
yeah.
at all. And so I found this really great program called FlyCalm and it was really great. I would just listen to it on the plane when I was getting on and it really helped. And sometimes I still listen to it just because I like it. Like yeah. I just got used to it. But there is something in there. There's something in the program. I think I just got it on iTunes. But there's something in the program where you know, it tells you to visualize taking all of your worry and fear and all your emotional stuff and sticking it in an overhead compartment and closing the door.
Ooh, I like that.
And so even just visualizing doing that,
yeah.
it weirdly just helps you. It sort of works.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's incremental. But every time I started flying when I was actively trying to get, it just got a little bit less and a little bit less and a little bit less. And then after a few months, after a year.
Fit under the seat.
Yeah. that didn't fit under the seat. It was in
you
the
You had
overhead,
to check a couple of them.
In the upper compartment. And also in my brain, the airline was charging me for all of the extra emotional baggage. Yeah, totally worth it. You know, they got to make money too.
Yeah.
So,
and I think that incremental thing is important because I think people think when they make changes, if it doesn't work 100% the first time, they're like, well, fuck it, I tried.
Well, you're setting yourself up for failure.
100%.
When, you know, if you kind of do this thing, especially like fitness is the easiest example where you go, oh, fuck, I haven't worked out in a long time. And you're like, I'm going to work out 10 times this week. It's not healthy.
No.
Not only is it not healthy, but it also, you're probably not going to stick to it. Because
you're miserable.
You're going to be miserable yeah. and it's going to be awful. So you got to, a little bit of incremental, like, oh, I'll just, you know, because if you just make incremental changes, small changes that are easy to manage and are digestible, you will, the cumulative effect will be once you figure out how to manage that little bit, then you can add on something else yeah. and then you can add on something else. And it won't even feel like work at that point. It's like, oh, I've got to get this out. Maybe I'll just try. Maybe, yeah. maybe I'll work out twice a week, you know, yeah. like it, but yeah, I wouldn't say like, don't quit drinking, quit smoking, change your diet and start exercising 5 times a week in the same day.
And if you decide to do that and decide that that's how you're going to approach it, maybe you're not quite ready to let go of those things. You know what I mean? Like maybe that's your way of being like, well, this will fail inevitably.
Well, that also has the undercurrent of like, oh, you just need to obsess over things.
Sure.
As opposed to, you know,
that's very true.
If you really want success in this area, then you need to, it needs to be, and that's very difficult. It's very difficult for me. It was very difficult for me. You know, because the alcoholic brain isn't just about drinking. It's about like there. I approach that.
I want it. I want it all.
Well, there's a lot of things that are sort of like obsessive thought, and I really had to learn how to, even in relationships. You know, when I used to sort of crave drama, and I think it was sort of a way of getting a high.
Oh,
the
yeah.
same way with alcohol.
It feels great, and then you know someone cares.
Yeah.
You're sure that they care because they're making a big fuss, and that's how you know.
And there's passion,
oh,
and there's
yes.
like, oh, and then there's making up, and
yes.
then there's, you know.
Yes.
And learning to just be still and calm and, you know, like, Lydia is so easy to be around, and that was kind of maddening at first because I'm like, oh, there's no, oh, it's, oh, it's fine. It's okay. Oh, it's okay just to, you know.
I'm one of those two. I have that problem too.
It's really, you know, in the, like, the year we've been together, I can't, I don't think, I think the biggest altercation was something like, hey, what are you, oh, this is silly, you know, because we, because like you said, we sort of have those goals of like, you know, we've both had troubled relationships in the past, and we both...
You're both grown-ups.
And we both, we're both grown-ups, and we both just want, like, our goal is to, you know, hey, we just want to be happy together and understand each other and have a good relationship. And so,
I own a publishing empire.
A couple things on the list.
Well, I can't give her a publishing empire. So,
oh, wow.
She's very...
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. Although, I'm gonna make her sign a prenup for my adorable TV money.
Gonna be so cute when the Hearst lawyers
I'm
look that
it
over.
You guys, upon you.
I'm gonna make her sign a prenup on Hello Kitty stationery. So adorable.
We're like, I gotta keep all my Doctor Who shirts. You don't get a single one of those.
I don't know. And then, you know, something terrible happened. I'm sure their lawyers would be like, we found a loophole where you can get all the shirts. God damn it.
That's so fun.
But I think just sort of, you know, learning to be calm is a
and appreciating calm.
And appreciating calm and not being bored by calm and not being self-destructive with calm because you need to, you know, like up and down and up and down. It's not having that. I realize that there was an emotional drug behind that, and I go, well, fuck, of course. It's connected to all that other shit.
Yeah.
But I don't think I would have done that if I didn't have regular therapy. And I tell people, when you don't think you have a problem, it's important because it's important for you to sit down with someone on a regular basis and say whatever is on your mind, whatever you're feeling without fear of judgment, and someone who has the experience to reflect some things back to you and get you to ask good questions and explore. It's really helpful.
It's a spa day when you're doing well. To me, it's like a massage when you're doing well. And then it's there when you're not doing as well. And it's like a relationship like no other. It's none of your friends'
jobs.
More like
a chiropractor when you're not doing well. Crack, crack.
Oh, I'm fine. Yeah. It's not your friend's job to like just listen to you talk and never have any of their own stories. Like,
right.
Yeah. And if your therapist is ever telling you about their lives, get another therapist. That's not some you can develop a personal relationship with, but it's not a two-way street. It is a one-way street, 100%. And you never get a chance to have that in life. What a lovely thing that we get to actually experience that. Everybody should be in therapy all the time.
That's funny that you say that because, you know, because when I talk, a lot of my therapy sessions are by phone just because of my schedule. And so, you know, she'll go, how are you doing? And I go, oh, I'm doing okay. How are you? And she was like, we're here to talk about you.
Exactly.
You know, it's like, oh, okay. Yeah,
yeah,
of
that's
course.
Right. I forgot about that. And sometimes it's a struggle, but the only thing that makes you a good therapist is that you've had personal experience in the same thing. You're not that great of a therapist. You should have more tools because you can't experience everything that everybody's gone through.
Right. Yeah. Right. But you should still be able to have the point of view that can sort of, because I think most emotional struggles usually come from the same handful of
it's
for
all
the same
the emotions underneath
of
yeah.
reasons.
I hope, yeah, so, I would say so.
Yeah, I mean it's almost like you know there are it's almost like DNA. There's like a handful of base ingredients just reconfigured in different ways, and
it's
like
true.
Sort of tearing through and going, okay, this is your configuration, and that's what these basic elements are.
Yeah, and I felt that. You feel scared. I felt scared. That's an emotion we've had in common, but the way you're feeling it, very different than how I felt it. I had a client when I was an intern, best teacher I've ever had. He's like a 7-year-old boy, same, I can't say his name.
but here's his Twitter account.
He had been abused, and we were going through like, I was trying to take him through some relaxation stuff, and I was like, and he's African American young man, and I was like, so imagine yourself at the beach, and he was like, God, Miss Emily, why do white people always want me to go to the beach? I don't like the beach. And I was like, bing, that's it. That set off like, oh my God, you're right. That's where I would go if I wanted
that's
a relaxing
scene. That's so fascinating.
Scene. That's not where you would want to go.
You were making it about yourself without realizing
without
it.
Even realizing. And without realizing, he was like, all you white therapists I've had want me to go to the beach. I don't want to. And I was like, okay, where do you want to go? He wanted to go to Disneyland. So we then set up a scene, which doesn't seem like a calm place to me. Very sorry, Matt.
I love it.
But he wanted to go to Disneyland, so then we reconstructed a whole thing based on Disneyland, and I was like, let me never forget this lesson of, like,
of
you can't assume
all
anything.
All white people want to go to the beach.
you
and
can't
that
assume
young
anything.
Man. was Bernie Mac.
God, how great. Having Bernie Mac as your client is a therapy.
What if I don't understand that now whenever I see an African American, I'm like thinking about Disneyland, you know?
Like, nope, not today. Yeah, you're racist in the other way. You can be racist in two different ways.
By the way, this kid was right. I would way rather go to Disneyland than the beach.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're being racist as a Democrat. She was being racist as a Republican.
I just think, you know, the beach, it's like, it's sandy and it's hot. And, you know, Disneyland is just, although you don't always see it at Disneyland, but it should be pure joy.
But you see
a lot of exhausted families. And
have you seen that blog of like angry celebrities at Disneyland?
Oh my God,
so
no!
Great. Look that up. It's either mad or sad celebrities
at
Disneyland.
What are you doing? Get on there.
And it's like Billy Corgan sitting on a and just like looking furious and upset that they're at Disneyland. Most likely they're upset that someone's taking their photo at Disneyland.
Or maybe they're not even upset at all. It's just sort of like, I mean, I think they just have, like, some people just have bored resting face.
It's true.
And that in a snapshot of a moment, that, you know, I think that's what some people who judge celebrities or judge anything based on one image, one picture, one sentence. It's like, look, dude, if someone followed you around all day long and cataloged everything you said, anything, there are so many times that a joke or an expression or something could be taken out of context.
Oh, sure.
And do you want to have your entire existence judged on a half a second?
Judged and destroyed.
I mean, it's so ridiculous that that's where people are at.
We're at a very black and white place, black or white place in society of like, you either need to be good all the time or you need to, if you mess up once, you are dead.
But good is actually, but good and bad, which are subjective,
very subjective
terms.
Yeah.
And based on individual preferences, it's an impossible standard because you can't be good to everyone all the time.
Yeah.
You know?
How do you deal with that?
I don't know. I mean, like, I'm pretty... Katie just found...
I mean, he does look pretty upset, doesn't
Katie
he?
Katie just found the vlog. Yeah.
God bless Billy Corgan.
Is that Big Thunder Mountain or is that the Snow White Mine Train?
Okay.
There's quite a few of them. And
there's a picture of me
one
and
of the Kardashians. I think I don't know who that is. That's she's a gorgeous model. I can't think of her name.
Alessandra. Yeah.
That's Jennifer Garner looking upset.
Wait, who was the one with the? Was that a Kardashian? I think
that was a Kardashian.
I think the goofy hat was. I think was that Beyonce. That's no. Oh, that was Beyonce?
The goofy hat was Beyonce.
Oh, it was okay.
Has that ever been said on your podcast? The goofy hat was Beyonce.
The goofy.
You know that we normally can't recognize
and not,
her.
And not goofy as a colloquialism. It was literally goofy.
She was wearing a goofy hat.
Yeah, she was literally wearing a goofy hat with
the
teeth.
It's one of the few times that you won't be like, oh my God, that's Beyonce immediately. It's a goofy hat on Beyonce. It's a great blog. I enjoyed myself thoroughly on that one. I think it's great. When I have seen celebrities at theme parks, I love it. I love that they're like, no, fuck it. I need to still go to Disneyland.
I think there is going to be some type of an emotional implosion at some point of everyone feeling, and not just celebrities, but everyone's online, of everyone ultimately feeling on guard all the time and trying to monitor everything they do to be perfect. This goes back to being perfect or not perfect, and not perfect is instant failure. It's like, it's not. It's fucking, we're humans, you know? Like,
we have to evolve.
If someone says something stupid, don't fucking attack them. Ask them why they said it or get some context or try to understand. But, you know, fighting, you can't fight extremism with extremism. You can't fight, if you think someone is making a crazy statement, you know, maybe it was taken out of context, or maybe they didn't really say it, or maybe there was a reason, or maybe
or maybe they're a person that you never would have interacted with before if there wasn't Twitter. There are horrible people in my hometown that say horrible things that I used to hear them say when I would be at the diner in my hometown. Why do I give more credence to them now that they're typing it?
Right.
Like, why people who say things that are against you or whatever, again, opposite of what you believe, are always going to exist. I don't know if we need to keep a catalog of them all the time. Like, if someone yells at me on Twitter and they, you know, are someone I've never met, never will meet, they don't like, or they're not on Twitter a ton, they just seem to only attack people on Twitter. Was I ever going to interact with you before Twitter? Was that ever going to be a thing where we'd have a moment to talk?
Side note, if you're ever going to hire me for a high-profile job, hire someone to go through my Twitter before you announce
Cleanse that feed!
Before you announce.
I'm sure 2010 Matt was saying some real dumb shit.
Oh, 2015 Matt says real dumb shit.
Well, that's the thing, is that you can't, you know, you can't judge a person's entire existence based on one tweet or one joke or one, because everyone says dumb things at one time or another, and everyone, I mean, literally everyone.
Yeah.
And but also this policing of, you know, it's sort of like, that's an interesting metaphor looking at the Disneyland thing, because that's kind of what our cult, what modern culture has become. It's, we're all on this ride, and there are people in the back that you've never heard of that are looking like 50 rows ahead and going, hey, that guy's not enjoying this the same way that I am. Fuck him. It's like, well, you fucking pay attention to yourself, you know?
Yeah.
You haven't seen your kids in 3 days.
Fun?
Why don't you pay attention to your fucking kids?
Why don't you have a good time?
Yeah, you don't need to police everyone else.
For your information, sir, my wife is standing by at the child swap. Her turn is next. Now enjoy this.
That was your context. That was the context that you needed. I like that. I'm always a big fan of context, especially for things like that, because I watched people that I had sometimes respect for when I was growing up say horrible, sometimes racist, hateful things, and then when you talk to them, you see that they're scared. They're scared that the way that they thought the world works is different, and they don't know what to do about it. And I was like, oh, the fear makes sense to me. Like that, I get that. I get being afraid that things are changing. Change is scary.
Now I just think people, now I think it's unfortunately much more insidious and self-serving than I think people would realize. But running around and trying to call everyone out on stuff is so much more selfish than it is altruistic, because I think there are legitimately some people that want positive social change, and I think those people go about it in positive ways, in constructive ways. They really do try to understand, but it feels like the majority of people just want to finger point and tear down because it makes them feel better about themselves, and that is selfish. Yeah. That is inherently selfish. When you are trying to achieve significance through someone else's downfall, it doesn't matter, you know, if you think you're on the right side of the argument. That's mechanically is a bad way to go about life.
It's not a good way to build good juju for yourself.
Well, it also just doesn't foster positivity. It doesn't foster learning. Like, people don't learn when you yell at them. Yeah. People learn when you talk to them and try to understand, even if you don't agree with them, rather than finger pointing, look at this fucking piece of shit, you know. I mean, you know, comedy is comedy. It's silly. Like, comedy is supposed to be satirical. But people do that for serious.
Yeah,
like,
a lot.
You know, there's a lot of things that we say on At Midnight that I would never say in life, like, in a real situation to a real person. But, you know, but I feel like there's so much aggression of, like, there's so much barking now.
And I think that aggression could be really useful if pointed in a direction that is towards change rather than towards and taking away of something.
Right.
So that I try to, when I'm having a day where I want to scream at everyone online, which happens all the time, I intentionally don't let myself do it. And then I try to do something that is productive in some capacity. I'm a huge volunteering nerd, and I think it eases all wounds and all like frustrations. And I try to do it as much as I can. I donate money. If I'm super angry and I can't stop being angry, I donate money to someone that I believe is doing something good.
Oh, what a great idea.
Every single time, I try to. I do an exchange.
That's a positive way to use anger rather than attacking.
I'm so fucking mad. And if you don't have the money, then have the time to do it. Like that, I used to not have money to donate to stuff, and then I would donate my time. Like, donate something of yourself that can help to people that you do like, rather than focusing on the people you don't like.
It would just be nice, but I think most people don't have this level of awareness. But it would just be nice if the people who are constantly trying to tear down, even if they think they're on the right side, even if you agree with them, it's like, hey man, don't make enemies out of your allies.
Yeah.
Like, don't approach things that way. I wish people would understand that kind of attacking, that type of tearing down, you know, like, that doesn't count as your
doing
community
work,
service.
Right? That's not volunteering.
It's not volunteering. Yeah. You're not making the world a better place.
Yeah.
You're making the world a more aggressive place. Community service really is going out and donating your time, like sending a tweet. Yeah, fuck that guy, you know, like, fucking tear that thing down. Like, that doesn't count as your community service. That counts as you serving your own ego.
You feel a little better. And I also think it's easy to get caught in that loop, because I feel like I've felt myself being pulled into it and being like, oh, shit, like, this could happen to anybody. I feel like even really, really good people have gotten sucked into this, like, kind of negativity, calling other people out. Really amazing, smart, wonderful, aware people have gotten pulled into it. And I wonder if some of them have that same thing you were talking about, of that addiction to drama.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's just that if you don't feel significant, everyone wants significance in some way or another.
Absolutely.
I feel like part of life, even when you look at biologically, you
do
know,
I
like,
matter?
Do I matter? Because, you know, when you break it down, of course, at the very basic level, we are beings who ultimately want to live on in some way. Is it through genetics, or is it do we want to pass our genes down? Do we want to pass our ideas down? But I feel like we would not exist as a species.
Your genes won't fit me.
I feel like I feel like we would not exist as a species if we didn't have this desire to thrive in some way.
Yeah.
And so I feel like that expresses itself.
No, the Neanderthals had that thrive, guys, and we fucking wiped them off the face of the earth.
Because yeah. They were wrong. Hashtag cancel Neanderthals.
Their art was not good.
Fucking bad art. Destroyed them.
Yeah. America did this to you, Neanderthals.
I mean, if they put emojis up on those walls, oh, damn.
That's the only way they could communicate was through emoji.
Good ad, Matt.
A lot of eggplant emojis in the Neanderthals.
Yeah. So many.
Yeah. But I think that part of it is just trying to establish some type of I matter, I am significant, and I understand the... You know, I certainly understand the desire to do that, the urge to do that, but I don't think that's the right way to go about it.
There's a lot of ways to be significant. I think that's what another thing people don't – they think they need to be famous. In this town specifically, people think they need to be famous to be significant. That's not true in the slightest.
Well, I also think what we were talking about earlier is that, you know, change through aggression is the same type of thing as like I'm gonna all of a sudden work out 10 times a week. It's like that is an extreme. I think real lasting change is calm and incremental and understanding.
It's passionate, but perhaps not aggressive.
Well, yeah. 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 Because no one, even if you force someone to go, okay, fine, you're right. They're just going to resent you. You know what I mean?
That's like forcing someone to stay with you who wants to break up with you. Do you know those people?
Yes.
I always talk to people like, how can I make them stay with me? Like, do you want to be with someone who like you're forcing to stay with
you? But then I win. What are you winning?
Like, think about your ultimate goal here. What is it that you want? Yeah, you may not know at this point because you can't force someone to be in love with you.
Damn it.
Yeah. It's a bummer.
Yeah.
I wish he could.
I don't know
Tom
if
Hiddleston.
You want to, though. I don't know if
look
you...
up. Look up.
You're married.
Right. Good point. Great point. So happily. But that, very, very happily. And I'm not even into white dudes, really. But that white dude, man. I just saw two movies with him in
it
this weekend.
He's
so
the one
good.
White dude.
Yeah.
He's the one white dude.
What about Hardy?
Yeah, he's probably at the beach.
I hope not. Right? Don't lose that white skin, that milky white skin,
Tom.
No,
he's definitely not at the beach.
Yeah.
He's British. He's definitely not at the beach.
Hardy? Yeah,
Tom
I'm all right.
Hardy. Yeah.
It's all right.
You're also
when I
him.
Saw him freelance rap that one time on camera, I was like, man, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he saw his MySpace
freelance
profile.
Rap.
Freelance? Thank you.
No. He doesn't
he
have
goes
a
around.
Label.
He doesn't have one
he
boss.
He doesn't have a label.
He raps
freelancing.
For... Yeah, he's
like,
a
let
freelance.
Me turn in my W-9 and then we can start. I will invoice you for this rap later.
Oh, I needed to bring my ID to drop these sick beats. How many dependents do I have?
Could you pay my S-Corp?
I'm not going to kick him out of bed for eating crackers or whatever, but, you know.
What rhymes with S-Corp?
Nest Corp? Nope, not at all.
Doesn't work.
Nope,
shit,
not
I'm
at all.
I'm a bad freelance rapper. Bad. Oh, I'm no good.
That would be great. We're still trying to come up with puns, all of us are. I can tell.
But you're Emily, we're at an hour.
Oh. Nah. Thank you.
We're going to have to pick this up next week. I do feel like sometimes these podcasts are like therapy sessions, but it's good, you know, because I think we're all trying to learn about ourselves in as much as we're trying to help discover things for other people. But I am actually very excited to read your book.
Oh, thank you.
Because I've always had such great affection for you. You're such a kind, gentle, wonderful person to be around.
Aww.
And also someone who is very uncomfortable with compliments. You should have seen her when we did the when I dropped in at Meltdown. And someone who was on stage promoting your book.
Joan and Camille constantly are on stage promoting
she
my book.
She was so flustered and like, stop it! Don't! I gotta learn how to take compliments.
I'm
like, genuinely.
I'm very
flustered.
Southern in that way that I'm like, if you compliment me, I'll be like, oh, well, I don't know. I don't think so.
Should I bring you up on stage? You'd say, no. Don't you dare.
I'm getting better at that. I'm getting more and more comfortable with it. But yes, thank you. Thank
but,
you for the
but
nice
I,
things you
I
said.
I think for a very. For a very constructive and warm, sincere book in sort of real terms, I think people should check out Super You and follow you on the appropriate platforms. The Gynomite, GYNOMITE.
That is correct.
Did you ever explain you? I know you explained to me why you picked.
I used to do burlesque dancing, and that was my burlesque name.
Are you serious?
didn't know that.
Dynamite! You have to say it like that.
Oh my yeah. God, that's fantastic.
That was, yeah, and my
dance. You've had the most interesting life of anyone I've ever met. You were a therapist, and you dated circus, and you were burlesque, and you're married to a comic, yeah. and you book a comedy show, and you do a video game podcast,
so many
and you wrote
things.
A this is fucking
so many things.
You're the perfect example of like what it means to be in our culture, of like being able to do a lot of different things, you know, and not have to just stick to one thing and then integrate all of those things.
The best I can. I don't burlesque dance at all anymore. My teacher, when I told her what my name was going to be, everybody else was like Vivian Lesex or whatever. and I'm sure that was an actual one. And she was like, that's a little too jokey. And I was like, I'm sorry, that's my name.
Vivian Lesex.
I have so much respect for the art of burlesque. And my teacher was an amazing woman. And I haven't done it since then because she was so good. I haven't found anybody to
watch. What is the essence of good burlesque?
It's a tease. It's not about how much skin you show. It's about the fact that you are making the audience want you to take it off and you are taking your fucking time with it. It helped me a lot. And I recommend to all girls, get into a burlesque class to rediscover, to understand your sexuality in a way that belongs to you and nobody else. Because you're dancing only for you. Especially when you're in the classes. You aren't dancing for dudes.
Because you're only giving people what they want when you feel like it.
Absolutely.
Right.
And it was like, oh, my sexuality can exist without a dude being present. It doesn't right. have to have a dude there. It can just be mine. It doesn't have to belong to anybody else.
Dudes have known that for years. We jerk off a lot.
Yeah, dudes. And I do think dudes have more of a sense of like, this is mine and I will give it to you. Whereas ladies are like, I'll just be waiting here for when you're ready to let me.
Yeah, but I don't know. I'm curious. Everyone is different, but do women ever go, I'm really bored. I guess I could jerk off. You know what I mean?
Like, I do. If Camille's out of town, it's the same thing as anybody else where it's like, well, I guess I'll do that. Maybe I'll figure out something to write or something. I don't know. Maybe I'll go for a walk. It's the same.
Best way to work through writer's block.
That's right. Yeah.
Maybe I'll get a pizza. I don't know.
Maybe I'll work out or something.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
From the coffee beans.
Because, you know. My question was unfortunately male and tone deaf, but I've never asked that question before.
A lot of ladies I know, a lot of us have the same like, well, especially
I could do that.
Yeah, for me it's like it's when Kumail's not there, but for especially my single lady friends are like, well, that's how you start the day. Mm-hmm. You got to clear the chambers and then you get to work.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Clear. I never. Yeah. All right. Interesting.
You can also find me on Tumblr at emilyvgordon.tumblr.com.
That's fantastic. What a great idea.
Oh, yeah, it's the best. Wait, you don't do that?
What a
no,
great
I'm confused.
Idea.
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I'm just so busy in the morning. I don't have time.
You're not masturbating in the morning?
No.
This might explain a lot.
Chris,
I feel like you're going to have a better day.
Masturbating in the morning.
Oh, my God. Everyone's doing it, you guys. Everyone's doing it.
You can't crank one off of the toilet while you're waiting. To get
well,
right then,
make
too
it
far,
sound
too far.
Make
Myra.
It sound so.
I'm just trying to find time for him. Guy's got a shit, right?
Yeah. You can't do that at the same time, can you?
That makes it so veterinary. it's just like
I don't want to know that you can do this.
Clear it all out.
Let's see. First, we'll express your anal sacs, and then we'll clean out the testicular pipes.
I don't think I could get off if I smelled poo. I don't think that.
Matt, I think you may
flush
have a. It doesn't just go away.
Thank you.
It does.
Unless Matt's ejaculate smells like shit. Maybe that's the only thing it is.
Oh, God. We've got Dory on the line. Dory.
She doesn't know. I'm Catholic.
Oh, good point. Good point. I look forward to you guys figuring that out in a couple weeks.
Look forward to the wedding night, guys.
Woo, yeah. Boy.
Honey, I'm going to go... I'm gonna
clear all the chambers.
I'm going to go...
Do a real quick shit come, and then I'll come right back. That's so gross.
Coming on shit. Shitting on cum.
Well, this took a good turn.
We're so sincere, and then we just went straight to shit cum.
The book is Super You, now available wherever books are sold.
No, I just want you to find the time.
I just
promise me tomorrow that when I see you,
I'm too sleepy
podcast,
in the morning. Like I'm too like I have too many things in the day.
Don't
like,
you
when
wake
I...
up with a fucking divining rod?
Oh man,
you know
can't look anybody in the eye. You look at scout.
He legitimately looked away in the most sincere, like, oh man, now I gotta.
What kind of desk is this? Where is this from? This,
you know, my days when I wake up, just like the emails come in and I instantly have to, you know, like just start dealing
leave
with
the phone out
with,
of the room.
With
take
stuff.
A minute. Yeah, I would say
leave
take
a
minute
the
in the morning.
You do you, literally.
You do you.
All right.
Give it a try. Let us know.
Give it a whirl.
I'm not 100% convinced I'm going to report back on this.
A whirl.
Don't need to. Don't need
no,
to know.
We'll know by your change in demeanor.
See the look in your eyes.
Hey, guys. Everything's just so chill, isn't it?
What a great day this is.
Hey, man.
What if this has been your why you're wound up all
your
the time?
Career drive
you just had no idea.
Incremental change.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
If you just jerk off one morning a week, then it could become two mornings, then five mornings. Then all day.
Oh man.
Oh my God. What if I just become like a heroin addict and it's just
I yeah
just,
I don't want that. Okay, just, at midnight. I'm sorry. I didn't suggest it. It was more Matt Myra that suggested it.
In this jerk chamber where there's just all these conspiracy theories written in cum all over the walls and all these charts and geometric formulas. Guys,
my boy.
Guys, I got it.
One of the filthiest human beings I've ever met in my whole life. That's always my favorite thing about you.
What, me?
Yeah.
Matt's the one who shits while he jerks off.
That's true. That's
true. No, it was merely a suggestion. It can be done.
You haven't done it. You've done it.
Of course.
All right, then.
We've all done it.
We haven't all done it.
We've
I think we've proven today that
Kyle
we haven't all done
it.
It.
Katie's doing
no!
it right now.
No! Stop it.
Scout.
Scout's doing it.
Scout does it constantly.
What a
great idea, says Scout.
Is that Scout's voice?
That's Scout's voice. Okay. No. I don't know. That was more of a cat voice, I think.
Oh, you're right. That was more of a cat.
More of a meow.
I think Scout's, she's got a, like a, hey, guys. Hey, guys.
For a cat, I don't think a cat's rubbing one out in a litter box. Like, that just feels...
No, certainly not. It's too grainy in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know what cats do.
Good point.
Not a cat guy.
Great picture of Scout reading my book, by the way. That was really lovely. That was a lovely thing.
Well, congratulations again.
Thank you.
And please come back again soon.
Sure.
And I always adore hanging out with you. And so we'll have some pool parties over at my house. And then, but we'll do it in the afternoon, not in the morning.
You'll be busy.
I'm busy.
We show up early and just standing outside.
Nearly every pool party she had this summer, I was somehow out of town.
Yeah, you're always out of town, I feel like. I don't
God,
know.
I'm going to have to get a new iCal color to just put the time.
Pool blue.
No, not that.
Oh.
The masturbation. You're already looking to schedule
off
it.
Off-white?
Off-white, yeah. The off-white.
All right, guys, you've been great. I got to go.
Can you schedule things on iCal in increments of like 4 minutes, or does it have to be 15?
That's a great question. I think 15.
Take some time with yourself, though.
Yeah, you're right.
No, we all do it in like, it's like a 2 minute.
It takes 2.5 minutes.
Yeah, there's all no. Right.
If that.
Good. All right, good. Well, we solved a lot of things, and I adore all of you. And
it might take you a little longer the first time, but as the weeks
Romancing
progress,
the stone.
Hey, I'm going to be...
I don't even know where that came from. All right, then. I think the stone would be the clitoris.
Really hard to find DeVito, if you know what I mean. Come on, guys. Huh? Come on.
I thought that was the sexiest movie. I had such a crush on Billy Ocean, too. It was so weird.
Really?
Yeah. My first real crush was Billy Ocean. I don't get
That's
it.
So interesting.
Yeah.
What do you mean you don't get it? He was constantly asking to get out of his dreams.
Wow. Into
his car.
He was a handsome dude. I just
and
was
Caribbean
like, why
Queen?
This guy? Why was it this guy? Of all the people that maybe were closer to my age, but Billy Ocean?
Listen, I don't think I've heard anyone say, you know, Romancing the Stone was great. I'm totally had a crush on Billy Ocean from that.
My first was Gina Davis.
That makes sense.
A League of Their Own.
Oh, so gorgeous. And everybody, the makeup and hair was so on point in that movie.
Something about baseball and
I gotta say, I think even older heads. Gina Davis in that was pretty
when
was
she was the old lady?
Yeah.
All right then.
I really it was a different woman.
It was a different woman, but she yeah.
Wait, was it?
Yes.
Okay. I should go back and rewatch that.
I know that. I've talked to Penny Marshall about it.
Oh.
Right. Just kidding.
Madonna was in that movie.
I read her book.
So many great hots in that movie.
So reading a book means you're like talking to a person, so read Super You and talk to Emily.
Hey, that's right. Have a conversation
there
with
you
me.
Go, and then jerk off after.
Enjoy your morning masturbation burrito, poop.
We've been doing so well of not being dirty, and then we just did it all.
Oh. The Nerdist podcast really outdid itself this time. Let me tell you something.
That was great.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.